That's always a big relief when she gets on and says that. Anyway, so again, we're here on the LHRN Live conference call, October, and we're here with our Maria here with our co-host Jessica and Andy, and we're going to start off tonight by talking to Jessica about her big event that she had last weekend in her hometown of Mesa, Arizona, and she does a big fundraiser, and this was her second year, and I've been lucky enough to attend both of them because I'm only about a five-hour drive, so we make the drive, and I'm going to have her talk about her event and about how she went about doing it and what she puts into it, which is a lot of effort, that's for sure. So go ahead, Jessica.
Thanks, Maria. Hi, everyone. Hi. I'm Jessica. And so this past Sunday, I had Dinner in the Dark. And a lot of ways I just kind of describe Dinner in the Dark is, I say, a unique dining experience. Because actually, I believe there were five people there that had vision disabilities. Other than that, everyone's sighted. So everyone kind of walks in, and they walk into a main lobby, and then from there they get blindfolded. They get blindfolded, they get escorted. This year was by a local cyber department, and they get escorted to their seat, and they have a three-course meal completely blindfolded. So throughout the dinner, I kind of talked a little bit, shared a little couple stories from my blog, Blind Girls Can Rock Heels. And then I had a local neuro-ophthalmologist actually talk. She did her fellowship at Boston Palmer. So it was really kind of cool to get her perspective. She's super excited about LHON. She loves that work that I'm close. She kept saying, it's such an honor to be here. And I'm like, honestly, it's such an honor for you to want to be here, sort of thing. So it was exciting. So we had the neuro-ophthalmologist. And then from there, everyone had, the things that you can imagine. The first course was salad, and I hate eating salad. And the second course, we had chicken and green beans. The green beans, I think, were really long, so it gets a little awkward if you don't cut them. And potatoes, and then there was a peach cobbler. So it's all types of foods that they have to experience. And people are asking questions like, who's to my left and who's to my right? And I would get feedback like them talking about how it was difficult to hear a conversation with people at the table because they didn't know if people were talking to them. And I'm like, I totally understand because we missed out on the visual cues. So it was really cool because the people really felt like jumped into the entire experience, kept their blindfolds on the whole time, and really kind of had some cool takeaways that they later told me. And I had everyone from the community, from my running group to my coworkers to family friends, and a couple people that are involved in the Blind Center. So it was really fun. This year, I also had a conference to attend who we met in D.C. in June for the LHON conference. So it was just a really fun experience. It's interesting that we changed locations this year. So
Jessica,
a lot of people this year had
Jessica,
to kind of jump into
I'm going to just break you right there really quick. Can I please ask you all to, again, *6 to mute? Because somebody is walking, and we can hear that. So, again, if you don't have your phone on mute, please *6. Thank you so much. Okay, I'm sorry, Jessica, but it was getting
Oh, no worries. But it's a really fun experience. There's a lot of reasons. The experience really, my biggest goal is for awareness. It's just for other people, especially those that are affected and know people in the community. They kind of gain an appreciation and they kind of get a little glimpse of kind of what we go through. And it also makes me have to be a little bit more patient or kind of have a little bit of an understanding what we go through with buffets and food and dining and conversations. And when we miss out on those visual cues. So I always find it successful when the feedback I get is like, oh, my gosh, I had a hard time with X, Y, and Z, and I'm like, yeah, I totally get that. And so it's just cool to kind of bring that awareness to those that are around you. My goal is to kind of get more of the community in Phoenix involved. We had 3 LHON families that attended, which was awesome because I actually didn't meet 2 of the 3 ever before. So we had the Hooks family, and the whole Hooks family attended. So that was cool. They actually lived down the street from me, and it's great to get involved and meet them. And then we had Candace's sister, Kimberly. And Kimberly's not affected, but Candace is, and I met her in June, so that was cool to have some connection there. and her dad attended, and then, of course, Maria attended. So it was great to kind of also get Maria's feedback. She's been there both years, and, of course, it's always nice to have an LA twin sister there. So it was great. It was a fun event. I've learned a lot of what works and what doesn't. So if you want to have a dinner in the dark in your city, I'm happy to help. I can help point you in the right direction if you're thinking what size you're thinking versus restaurant versus hotel. There was definitely some hurdles I went over with people wanting to charge deposits and crazy things like that when we're just LA Twins people trying to raise money for research. So I'm happy to help with once you want to jump into how many people you think you're going to have attend, because it's fun and I've learned a lot just what to say and not to say and how we can kind of jump over hurdles like deposits and things like that. It's really amazing to me how many people you say we're a 501c foundation, how many people want to really donate and really want to be able to be to help you. Got a lot of donations, so we did a raffle. And we raised $1,000 in the raffle. It's crazy. And there's so many people in the community that are willing to help. So if you're interested in hosting Dinner in the Dark, call me, message me, anything. I'm happy to help. It's fun. I can tell you the things I've learned.
Thank you, Jessica. I appreciate you giving us the quick snapshot of which the big event you do every year, and I see it being an annual event for many, many years. So anyway, thank you. It was great, and I do recommend doing your own a dinner in the dark in your own city, town, county. I've had it on my bucket list for a year, but I'll get there. I'll get there soon. So anyway, thanks again. I again want to say *6 to mute your phone because we can hear conversations and people walking, and we're going to have our guest speaker on, and I'd really like it a little bit quieter. So thanks, Bunches. All right, so moving on. We have our guest speaker tonight is Paul Walker, and he is going to be talking about not only his, his background, but also about support and services for disabilities, legal, how to handle things in the workplace, maybe even related to schooling. And he also uses a guide dog, and it's very interesting his point of view and his take on why he just loves using a guide dog over a cane. So with that said, I'm going to turn our call over to Paul Walker, and if all of you could hold your questions until the end, I'd really appreciate it. So, Paul, go ahead, and thank you again for being here.
Anything you want me to write next, let me know.
Okay.
Thanks, Maria, and congratulations, Jessica, on that dinner. That sounds like a great event, and you did a great job with it. Hopefully we'll be able to do some more, have other people do more of those around the country.
Thank you.
Again, my name is Paul Walker. I live in Columbus, Ohio. Been in Columbus for about 45 years. I'm 67 years old. I worked for the state of Ohio for a total of 30 years in a couple different departments, the last 20 of which was at the Ohio Civil Rights Commission as an investigator. Just to back up a hair, I had been visually impaired my whole life. Started out with congenital cataracts, had vision in both eyes. It was somewhat limited, but not horrible. And then when I was 14, I got hit with something that we didn't even know what it was until about 1999, and that was LHON. Lost vision in the better of my two eyes, and ended up having nothing because I subsequently had a detached retina that they didn't repair because they didn't know what was wrong otherwise. So then later on in the 90s, I also developed, as I got older, developed glaucoma. So I got kind of a three strikes going here. But you got to get up and got to keep moving. So I was able to graduate from college, did a little bit of graduate work, even was in law school for about a year. And enjoyed my work with the Civil Rights Commission doing the investigations for the last 20 years because I was able to help people with different kinds of disabilities and accessibility issues and with public accommodations as well as employment. I'm going to hit a lot of topics here and maybe just make a brief comment on a few and go on to something else. So if anybody has any questions, I'd be glad to make further comments on it, at that point. But one thing, I'm very fortunate. I've got a very supportive family. I've got two grown daughters and a great wife, and that can be very important. Unfortunately, we're all not that fortunate, and it's no guarantee that you're going to have that, but it's great when you do have it. But if you don't, you just got to pick it up and keep moving down the field. There's a situation where if you've got some vision left or reasonable amount of vision that's usable, I know the tendency tends to be to kind of fake it. And you think, well, you know, a lot of times most people can't even tell I have a visual impairment unless they are close to me or I'm around them a long time or work with them or whatever. And that can work for a while, but in the long run, it really isn't that beneficial to you. It's better to be.
He has some visual impairment, right?
Excuse me?
Nope.
Did somebody ask a question?
I think it was just someone just trying to mute their phone or something.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Accepting it yourself is a big part is other people accepting it. It's a long process sometimes to be able to learn how to cope with it and to accept it. I didn't actually ever consider myself a blind person or severely visually impaired until I started losing some more vision with the glaucoma in the mid-90s. So I was pretty far along before I was, you know, even had that in my mindset. And I didn't spend a lot of time with other blind people or visually impaired people until I went and got my first guide dog in 2002. And at that time, it was a four-week training period, and I spent time with other totally blind and visually impaired people, and it was one of the best months of my life. It was quite an amazing situation. So I'll get back to that here shortly. But as far as getting into the employment and services situation, I hope everybody knows, and this will be somewhat pertinent to people in Canada, because I'm sure you've got your own agencies. I'm not real familiar with a lot of them, but there are always state agencies that provide some services. It varies from state to state, locale, but there are at least minimal services provided by all the states as far as supporting you with a vision situation if you're legally blind. They can provide O&M, orientation mobility training. They can provide technical assistance with software and computer equipment. They can provide counseling if you need it. A lot of things like that they can provide, as well as the local lighthouse or vision services agencies. The Veterans Administration provides for veterans the VIS program for veterans of any age that have any kind of vision problems. So there's a program within that department also. If as far as employment's concerned, you have the right to an accommodation to help with your vision loss with any employer. If you need a larger monitor for your computer, if you need screen reading software or enlargement software or a CCTV, anything like that, the employer needs to be able to provide that or help you get that equipment. And it should not affect your position within the company or, you know, there's no reason to feel that you're opposing or anything like that, because it is a right under the Americans with Disabilities Act for you to have that. And in many cases, this is pretty smooth and it works out and people can be pretty cooperative. Then on the other hand, you can run into some issues and the companies don't want to do anything, or you run into a supervisor that wants to give you a hard time about it. You can, again, seek assistance with a state civil rights type agency or human rights agency, and if necessary, file a complaint or file a request for mediation with an employer to try to resolve those issues. Now, if you're looking for accommodation for your work situation, you do need to document medically that you need it. That is a requirement. If you just go in and say, oh, I need this or that, or I need a reader assistant for handwritten material or something like that, they normally aren't going to provide that unless you actually document the disability. So that is a requirement. They can request medical documentation to substantiate that. But at that point, then, they need to provide reasonable accommodations for the job, as long as there's not a what they call a substantial change or function of the job. That's the kind of the breakoff point. So there's lots of ways to be helped and things that you can work out to make your job easier and more efficient for you and everybody else that you're working with. In higher education, with the college, university situation, those institutions also are required to provide assistance to students as far as reading accommodations for, like, recorded books or scanned books so that you can use software on your computer or devices to read them, possibly special testing arrangements so that you can have again, your access to a computer with large print or screen reading so that you can have the time sufficient to complete the exam, and, you know, other services that you might need. And that would be like a disability services office within the schools. And, again, they're required under the federal law to provide that assistance for you. And most of the schools are doing a pretty great job anymore with providing that. Let's see. As far as public accommodation and accessibility for somebody with a disability, whether you're using a cane or a guide dog, you have the right to be in any public accommodation, any public facility, just like anybody else does, and you should not be interfered with or challenged to be in that situation, as well as in housing. You go to rent an apartment or buy a house. It's actually been situations where people have applied for renting an apartment, and they've been challenged about, well, you know, you're visually impaired or you're blind. How are you going to be able to take care of the apartment? That is totally illegal and not appropriate, and you can, you know, pursue that if necessary through a state housing agency or the Federal Housing and Urban Development, HUD, to resolve those issues. And also back to the employment situation for a moment, there are, again, state agencies that deal with what we call EEO, Equal Employment Opportunity situations, and you can also file with those agencies or the federal EEOC, which is has regional offices around the country and an 800 number that you can look up on the Internet and call if necessary. Let's see. As far as orientation and mobility, it's important to be safe and know how to use your orientation and mobility skills that everybody has. You don't know you have them sometimes, but to go through some training to be able to get around and be safe and be efficient in travel. And, again, the local state agencies and the Lighthouse and Vision Centers are able to help with that most of the time or direct you to who can help you with that. The options there are you've got the use of a cane as the standard, you know, blind person type thing that's identifiable, and a lot of people like that. A lot of people don't like it, and some people don't want to use it at all. Another option is for a guide dog, and that happens to be my preference. I find it much more efficient, much safer, and faster to move around with a guide dog than it is with the cane. Also, it's a much more socially accepted type situation. A lot of times, some of you may notice if you're using a cane, and you're around a group of people or someplace that you're not familiar with, the way kind of parts, nobody says anything to you, and you're kind of there figuring out what's going on. With a guide dog, people just have a much more easy time communicating with you, and it creates a lot easier social situation for a lot of people to make better interactions with folks than does sometimes with a cane. If you don't like working with a dog or you don't like dogs, obviously it's not going to work for you, but anybody that is needs any kind of assistance in mobility, I would strongly, and are legally blind, I would strongly urge them to consider it. And we can talk about that later or individually if you'd like to sometimes. I do outreach work for Guide Dogs for the Blind, which has a campus at San Rafael outside San Francisco and up in Boring, Oregon outside Portland. Like I say, I've been using a guide dog for 13 years, and I wouldn't give them up for the world. They're just fantastic, fantastic partners and assistive in getting around. And I always tell people they're the cuddliest technology available. As far as technology is concerned, most of you are familiar with the iPhone and a lot of the apps that work with the iPhone. A few months ago, we had a gentleman on, did a session on using Blind Square with the Aftershocks headphones. I started using it. That's another great mobility aid, with or without a guide dog, especially helping you know where you are. It reinforces and gives you that much more idea of where you are, and because it will tell you relative distances, different approaches that you can take. You can ask, where am I kind of thing around me, all different ways to find out where you are and where you want to go. I think, I've hit a lot of different things. I've bounced around a little bit more than I intended to, but if anybody has any questions, I'd be glad to address them. One other thing I want to mention generally about health and your eye conditions, I would strongly urge everybody to do whatever you can to keep yourself and your vision healthy. There's so much going on with these various trials and drugs that are being looked at this point and different procedures that I'm confident in the next several years there's going to be a big improvement for most of us with these kinds of conditions. So the healthier you are generally and the healthier what your eyes are, like from glaucoma or anything else, the better off we're going to be in the future to be able to maybe have some improvement. Anyway, I kind of jumped around there a little bit, but I'd be glad to answer any questions or get anything in a little more detail if you'd like.
Paul, this is Maria. Great. So much great information, and you did touch on a lot. Can you really quickly, though, the guide dog, the process of getting a guide dog, some people may be considering it, but can you tell us what the process is to get a guide dog, and do you have
Sure.
to do a lot of training? How does that work?
Okay. Well, it's really overall pretty easy. The basic guideline is that you've got to be legally blind, and you do need that orientation mobility skills. You need to be able to at least know how to use a cane, because that's, again, the primary way that over time that people have learned mobility training with a cane. So usually you would apply, like for Guide Dogs for the Blind, you'd send in an application, apply online, or call in and give them basic information over the phone. You would document your medical condition. They would send somebody out to interview you, and you'd do a walk with that the individual that comes out, the rep from the school, to show that you'd have some basic skills. Your application process may take roughly a month. And if you're accepted, then you'd have a waiting time of anywhere from 3 to 6 months, depending on specific circumstances, like if you needed a particular special training with the dog or something like that. But generally, once you're accepted, you go out for training. It's a 2-week training program. You are introduced to the dog like the second day that you're there after some general information is exchanged, and you go through the basic classes that they have as far as, just introduction to the whole process if you've never worked with a dog before.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a 2-week training program that you go work with, from the San Rafael campus, you work around that smaller town with the dog and the instructor, and then you actually go into San Francisco, work around there for parts of a few days. And so you work the dog in different types of situations, different traffic situations, on and off a bus, on and off rapid transit systems, that kind of thing. They'll customize the training of the dog based on what your environment's going to be, what kind of an environment are you working in, what kind of a place do you live in. Do you live in a more rural area or more urban area? Some places, for example, everybody doesn't have sidewalks in their neighborhood. So, they'll train, make sure that you know how to work with the dog in that environment as well as on sidewalks or in an urban area. So after you go home with the dog, you've got follow up with a regional representative that will be in touch with you and keep in touch to make sure that everything's going all right. If you need any follow-up instruction or assistance, there's an 800 number to call that you can immediate assistance with, and if necessary, they will actually send somebody out to work with you. The dogs, for example, of GDB, Guide Dogs for the Blind, all the dogs are raised there and bred there, and so it's we have complete control over the whole breeding, raising, and training of the dog. So we know that their hereditary situation with the dog and come out with a really good product at the end. You've got a very well-behaved, good-tempered animals to work with.
Oh.
And we primarily use Labrador retrievers and a mix of golden retriever and then some goldens just themselves. So it's a very interesting process. Like I say, the safety issue, I think, is a key point. And unless you, like I say, have an aversion to dogs, I'd strongly recommend everybody to consider it if you're able to.
When we talked, Paul, you had said that mentally it's much easier to be with a dog because you're not thinking every, you know, microscopic detail of walking because you have the dog doing some of your guiding for you. Hence guide
exactly.
Dog. So it's not as mentally exhausting with a dog as it is with a cane.
That's the way I felt about it for sure, and most people that I've talked with feel the same way. It's not that you're not aware. You obviously have to be aware because you're the one that decides when you cross a street or cross a intersection, something like that. You have to be aware of all that, but you don't have to watch every, you know, every crack in the street or the curb or the, you know, the sidewalk or if somebody's put a trash can out in the middle of the driveway or, you know, whatever. They've started to do road work or tear up the sidewalk to replace a pipe, you know, the dog is going to catch that and be able to get you around it or stop you before you get hurt. And one other thing I always forget to mention when I'm initially talking about is there's no charge for the dog or the training at all. You go to class, you have a residence facility that's with a private room. Meals are great, and there's absolutely no cost for the training or the dog or any part of that. We even have assistance for veterinary services if needed. And GDB does service all of the United States, Canada, and we've got several graduates from that live in other countries.
Oh, well, that sounds great. Well, you know, I'm glad you talked about that because, of course, one of the questions that people always ask, when are you going to get a dog? Are you going to get a guide dog? And you kind of, you know, especially if you're new into this LHON and, you know, still getting your feet on the ground about it all, you're like, I don't know. I don't even know how to use a cane. So, you know, there is a process to it. And going back to the very basics of O&M training is key for anything, you know, for your mobility. And whether it's a cane or a dog, those skills are, even if you never want to use a cane or a dog, I agree with Paul, you have to have that orientation mobility training because you can walk, no problem. You get going. But if you don't know where you are, you know, you're going to be in trouble. So that's
and it's
great.
So,
well,
I'm sorry, Maria, but it's so easy to get overconfident, especially if you're going in an area that you think you know because you've been there. But like I say, all you need is one thing to be changed that day, that morning, that afternoon, that 5-minute period that you happen to be walking through there, and it can be a disaster. You know, and I know a friend of mine from Guide Dogs said that, you know, everybody always gets the question, well, how much can you really see? And God, I hate that question because how do you explain it? It is different. Even people with the same condition have different, you know, amounts of vision, different ways that that they perceive it at all. And it's like, how do you, it's really impossible to answer it. So one thing that I came up with this friend of mine was that I see less than I think I can see, but more than you think I can see.
I think that is the absolute best little line ever. And I have used that since we talked, Paul. I have used that, and I think it just says it perfectly. I really do, because
that's
you do have friends
great.
That will grab you and tell you everything that's in its way, even though we have, you know, low vision, you know, and they cling to you like, you know, you're going to fall off a cliff. But then you have other folks, but then you start walking like you're king of the road, and you really maybe aren't. So I love that line, Paul, and thanks for sharing that with us. I want to be able to open up the call here for anyone who has questions for Paul on anything that he talked about, anything you'd like to add, you know, please feel free to unmute your phone, *7, if you want to speak, and ask away. This is your time. This is your call, and I invite you to sound in and let us start the conversation.
Paul.
Yes.
Can you repeat your phrase there that you just ended with?
Okay. I can see more than you think I can see and less than I think I can see.
I like it. Thank you.
Yeah.
And the other thing with the dog is it's amazing how many people will start conversations with you that otherwise you, like I said, if you're just sitting there with or without a cane and you don't have any idea what's going on necessarily so much around you, that the dog can really open up that social situation and, you know, it doesn't relate to you. Even though the dog's helping you get around, it's not the same thing as somebody thinking that you're blind. It's hard to explain, but it's really different.
Well, I don't think anyone's ever come up to me and said, oh, my gosh, what a cute cane. Yeah, no one's ever said that. So, you know, or ask questions like, oh, how old is your cane? You know, no
right.
one asks that, right? You know, I love the color of your cane. Well, actually, they do because I have colored canes. So they do ask me about my colors on my cane. So anyway.
Well, people are always impressed how well-behaved the dogs are. And that all goes back to the training. There's some schools that have dogs that aren't so well trained and behaved, and
mm-hmm.
they can be a problem. But
mm-hmm.
you know, there's a few schools in the country that do a supreme job, and they're a pleasure to be around all the time.
That's great. Well, if anyone is considering a dog, you know who to give a call to. Paul Walker. He has the leads. So you know, if anyone is considering that now or in the future, feel free to contact Paul. Is there anyone else that would like to
ask a
question?
Yeah, Maria, hey, this is Alyssa in San Diego. Hey, Paul, nice to hear you talk. Thank you. Really good information. Question about the dogs. I know we have some folks on the line that are parents who have affected children of various ages. Are there is there a minimum age threshold for getting a dog?
Well, actually, 3 weeks ago, if you asked me that question, I'd say yes, 16, but that isn't true anymore. I just found out that we had approved a young person that was 11 years old, and they were obviously very mature, but it used to be a hard rule. It is not a hard rule anymore. It depends totally on the individual. I would say probably you're not going to get an 8- or 9-year-old, but, you know, 10 or 11 or 12 apparently is not a problem if it's the right situation now.
Oh, yeah, good question. Good question.
Paul, this is Sharon from Hansville, Washington, and I'd like the contact information, if I may, for the GDB.
Okay, how about I give you my contact information and we can talk about, I can give you more specifically somebody to talk to. Otherwise, since I do outreach work with guide dogs.
That would be lovely.
Okay. Maria, should I go ahead and get my phone number?
Well,
or email
how about we do that at the end of the call?
Okay,
give your phone
sure.
number and information out so that we just do it one time and
absolutely.
You know, stay on the line. And, yeah, why don't we do that? But, yes, definitely want to give out Paul's information because he is obviously a wealth of information. So,
and I apologize. I feel like I kind of just got a lot of things all jumbled up together, but I was trying to cover a lot, and
oh, no,
I hope
you
it wasn't confusing.
Like, No, you did. No, Paul. It's like, you know, you threw out all the, you know, the hors d'oeuvres, and now we're all ready to eat. So, anyone, please speak up. You know, anything about the support services or any of that workplace legalities?
Well, Paul,
this
is Wayne from Florida, and I'm just curious. I just got in on the call. But what is your vision? What are the numbers? 20 over what?
What my vision is?
Yeah.
Gee, right now it's probably 2,400 in one eye and a very small field of vision. So, I mean, if I'm sitting here at a computer with Zoom text on it with a 24-inch monitor and probably at about five or six magnification to be able to be comfortable with it.
Okay. Great.
I do have, with the Libras, one of my problems is, and probably a combination of, with the glaucoma, light sensitivity is a big deal. If I go out when it's really, you know, bright sun, it's kind of a washout. So it's either too bright or it's not bright enough. It's very hard for me to get something that's just right.
Hey, Paul, this is John in Connecticut.
Yes, John.
And I enjoyed talking to you after the August call, and great information tonight. There was something you mentioned, I think, about halfway through your talk. It sounded like you said smart block. It was something that tells people, electronic thing that tells where you are at a certain time.
Okay, with an iPhone, one of the apps that's very usable is called Blind Square. There's one called
Blind Square.
You hear people probably have heard of Foursquare. Well, this is Blind Square. It's not the same company, but it does use Foursquare also. But it will actually, with your GPS on your phone, as you're walking, depending on how you set it up, will tell you every few, like street numbers or house numbers if you're walking down the street or building numbers. Doesn't do every one, but you can adjust how much information it does give you. So, but it also, as you're approaching a crossing, it'll tell you what street you're crossing, tell you how far you've walked, what direction you're walking, and you can also use it to search for specific types of businesses or public buildings and that kind of thing.
I didn't get the name, so thank you.
We actually did a call featuring Blind Square, and I don't remember the exact month. Maybe Lissa can sound in for that. But we actually had a representative from Blind Square, no, from the Aftershocks headphones, but he works with Blind Square, and an orientation and mobility trainer. It may have been the March call, and they spoke quite in depth about Blind Square, and a gentleman, Jim McRoy, uses it and just loves it, and he was telling us all kinds of great things he was doing with Blind Square. So it may have been the March call, but maybe somebody can look that up and let us know. But that would be a good conference call to listen to, John.
The other thing is with the Aftershocks, and that's I knew about Blind Square, but I didn't even try messing with it until I got the Aftershocks, and because it's hands-free, your phone can be in your pocket, and these Aftershocks are not interfering with the ambient noise or sound. So you can hear what's going on around you and not be distracted, or not, you know, miss something that's going on. And you can set the volume on the headphones so that you're still getting that input about, okay, you're here kind of thing. You know, 75 feet is Main Street and Market Street intersection. So
yeah.
I would think if just using it without the headphones would be usable, but it's certainly not as efficient without the headphones.
Yeah, and those of you who are not familiar with Aftershocks headphones, they're actually a headphone system that actually goes over your ear, around the back of your head and over your ear, and rests on the upper part of your cheekbone, jawbone, cheekbone right up there, above, you know, right in front of the ear. So they are not in your ear, so Paul was saying, you can hear everything going around you, but it's bone conduction. So you actually hear it but it's not blocking your hearing. So that's the Aftershocks headphones, and we did talk about those as well on that one conference call.
Maria, this is Andy. I'm pretty sure it was the May call.
May. Okay. Yeah, May. Okay, May. Thank you, Andy. May. If anyone wants to know more about Blind Square or Aftershocks headphones, the May conference call, when you can go to the links, you can listen to the May call, and you will get a whole hour of Blind Square and Aftershocks. So I recommend doing that.
And just to add to what you're saying, this is Lisa again. I'm on the Facebook group. I'm putting links up. I've got the Blind Square one up. I've got the Aftershocks one up. I'm starting to put a link up to Andrea's presentation from the conference call, and I'll pull up the phone call and get that one as soon as I've linked it, so it'll take me a minute, but I'm working on it.
Perfect. You can always count on Lisa to do live links. I just love it. She just gets us going live on our call, and it's awesome. So thank you, Lisa. Everyone look for that on Facebook. You'll have it all there. So that's great. Anyone else? Any other comments or questions?
This is Doug in Tallahassee. I'm just looking at the Blind Square right now. It seems like it's kind of pricey, right? It's about $30.
Yes.
It is.
It's worth it, though.
Okay.
It really is. Another app, too, go ahead.
No, that's okay, thanks.
I was just going to say another app that I think might have been talked about or somebody has mentioned it at some point is called the KNFB Reader. It's pricey. It's up to $100. You can catch it on sale occasionally at $50. This is for your iPhone. But it's like carrying around a portable scanner because it takes a picture of a document, a menu, a letter, a bill, whatever printed material, and by the time it takes the picture virtually, it's reading back to you, and it is amazing accuracy. I've been using different scanning software over the years, and this is definitely the fastest thing I've ever used, and it's quite good, quite accurate. The accuracy is amazing.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that, too. Great. That's another good one. Thanks, Paul. Anyone else?
Will they give Paul? Paul, will you give your phone number?
At the end of the call, yeah. We'll give his contact information at the end of the call. Not a problem.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Sure.
One of the other things
that today where this is just very ironic, and I really appreciate all your information, Paul. I hope you can hear me. This phone is just horrible, but I've been with the company for 18 years, and I'll just say that there was a job function that I performed, and due to my eyesight, they just changed it today, and I just have some questions for you how I can handle it in the workplace. So
sure.
If I could call you at some point and ask you some questions, I would appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much, Paul.
One other thing I just thought of about for the guide dogs, the one thing, and people don't mention this a lot, but I've had the question a few times, you know, will the dog protect you? You know, is the dog going to take any action if somebody by chance you're, you know, attacked or something like that? The dogs aren't trained for that, but I'll tell you, once you bond with that dog, first of all, if you got a dog that's 50 pounds or up, won't be very many people that will mess with you. But that dog is not trained to do it, but I would imagine in most cases that we are aware of, they do, you know, protect the person.
Mm, yeah.
So it's a kind of a safety thing. If it's you know, for just your own personal safety, besides running into things or falling into a hole, they kind of ward off people that may wish you harm otherwise.
Yeah. Well, I think everyone, unless you, again, have an aversion to dogs, everyone likes dogs. And, you know, for some of us who, had vision for some time, you know, we loved walking dogs. I have had dogs my whole life. We love walking dogs. So having a guide dog is like walking with a friend, which is, again, a lot, you know, more friendly than a cane. So, but again, you know, it's really an individual decision and, everyone's situation. So, you know,
it's totally a personal choice, but,
yep,
you know, consider it and, you know, it's just something to be aware of and care. And the other thing too is to know that any place that you can go, except maybe surgery, okay, that dog can go with you. On a plane, a bus, a boat, whatever, wherever you go, the dog can go with you. So it's not, there's not an issue of accessibility.
So restaurants and different coffee shop situations, they have to allow you to sit down with your dog next to you. Is that what you're saying?
If they don't, they're breaking the law.
Okay. Yeah, because you do hear weird, you know, strange situations of, you know, get that animal out of here. So anyway, well, good. Good. Lots of good stuff. Anyone else? We are getting towards our, you know, about 10 minutes left in our hour, but hey, you know, if you got something you want to get asked, please do so.
I do have a question. This is Pauline Wilcox from Fairport, New York, and my son has been impacted with LHON for about 3 years now. He's just 25, and he still doesn't like to let people know. So this kind of gets back to some of Paul's comments earlier in our talk tonight. And because of that, he does not use a cane. And he tends to walk outside by himself more in the evening because he can detect the street lights and the car headlights easier. Because I'll notice he doesn't, unless he goes with me or a friend, he won't go by himself during the day. So he doesn't want to use a cane because it's, again, calling attention to the fact that he has this disability.
Right.
My question for you, Paul, is because he's not using the cane, would they not allow him to get a guide dog? And frankly, I haven't talked to him to see if he loves dogs, but I don't know if he would be hesitant about getting a guide dog because, again, it's going to call attention to the fact that he has this disability. And until he gets beyond that, I don't know. But I'm just curious whether they would even allow him to consider that since he's not using a cane.
Well, I'll tell you, I didn't use a cane at all before I got my guide dog, the first dog. I took when I was getting some other assistance with some software and technical equipment and that kind of thing. The guy that did it was doing it with me also did O&M training, and he said, you know, you're not using a cane now, you haven't, but he said, you know, it's a good thing to know how to do. And I resisted the heck out of it, and I hated the darn thing. I still hate the darn thing. I've got one, and I call it Oscar, and it hangs up by my dog's harness, and I don't use it unless I absolutely have to. But my point was going to be, all I learned how to use it just so I knew how to use it, and I never, before I got the dog, went out and used that cane except to show them that I knew how to use it. So he could take a couple hours of 3 or 4 hours of training and probably learn how to use it enough to show that he knew how to use it. And that's what you got to do. You got to show that you know how to use it and that you can get around and know how to get around. So it is a minimum requirement for any school that I'm aware of that you have that ability to use it. Does that mean you actually have to use it? No. You got to know how to use it, though.
But it does concern me that from a safety aspect, just like you said, I mean, there's so many things that he's not noticing, just like you talked about, you know, there could be a trash can in the middle of the sidewalk or something, and it's easy to miss, you know, there's things like that. So,
mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you, I can totally empathize with him. I was there. I know exactly how he feels and what the whole deal was, and that I kind of mentioned that at the beginning. It's a matter of coping and acceptance and recognizing where you are. And when you're 25 or even 35, and especially if this just hits you, it's a heck of a change that you're going through. But I can only speak from experience in saying, you know, I wished I'd have given in a little earlier because it makes life a whole lot easier.
Absolutely.
That's the thing about it. You do have to, there's a balance there of acceptance on your part to know that you need to do those kind of things, but it does really make your life a whole lot easier when you are willing to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Yes, I Paul, I agree with you. And Pauline, great great questions, and we all can probably relate to that a lot. I know I've written about it. I didn't want anything to do with the cane myself. I thought it was all about me, but it really isn't all about you. It's about other people seeing you, keeping you safe, and also, you know, knowing that you can be there with a cane to cross the street, which I am learning to do right now. And that, you know, not having O&M training, I think really does limit your ability to be out and about on your own. And we all want that. We all want to be able to be out and about on our own. So even without the use of a cane, you know, the O&M training just alone, the basics to even cross the street. You're never going to get out of your neighborhood if you can't cross the street. You know, again, that's what I'm working on. But the other thing that, you know, out of all people, my doctor said to me was, you don't have to use your cane all the time. And I was like, yeah, you're right. I don't have to have that thing out 24/7. I use it when I need to. If I'm at home or around my neighbor, you know, around my driveway or whatever, I can get around. But so Pauline, for your son, the key, you know, one of the things that changed my mind was it was to help other people keep you safe and stay out of your way. But it also, you don't have to have it out all the time. If you're not comfortable, don't bring it out. If you're not comfortable in a situation, airport, busy, mall, you know, it's a lot easier to have the cane out than running into people. So that's my take on it, and I'm sure everybody can relate a little bit to everything that both Paul and I have said and what you've said about your son. So great,
Maria,
question. Yes.
One other thing, too, about just the comfort factor. I got my first guide dog in 2002, and my vision was not good, but it started to get worse when I was in the late 90s. And I called my wife and I talked about it, that sometime maybe, you know, I would get a guide dog. And she saw an article about a woman who traveled with her mother on cruises, and her mother had a guide dog. And we'd like to go on cruises. We'd gone on a couple, and she said, well, that would be great if you were able to take a dog on a cruise. Well, definitely, that's kind of a side issue. So I called my services for visually impaired person in Ohio that I'd worked with for years and years, and I'd talk to her periodically. And I said, you know, do you think I've got the right situation to have a guide dog? Or do I have too much vision? And it used to be that guide dogs were primarily for people that had, you know, were totally blind or, you know, virtually totally blind. And she said, no, you've got actually less vision than quite a few people I know that have guide dogs. They've changed the approach to that. Again, this was back in the 90s. And so finally, when I decided to do it in 2002, it was the best thing, one of the best things I ever did. And my wife, had a real simple route to work. I'd get on the bus and go down, you know, 2 miles in the same main street and get out and walk into the building and I was at work. But I was really surprised after I got the dog. My wife said, I am so much more comfortable and less anxious when you leave the house with your dog than I was before, even though I knew you were pretty good at getting around, but I don't worry about you at all with that dog. And it was amazing. I mean, I didn't realize how stressful it was for her, even though, you know, like I say, I was getting around fairly well still at that time. But she was so much more comfortable knowing that I had that dog and the dog wasn't going to let me get into trouble, basically.
You know, that's right. And that kind of fits right in there with it's not really all about you. It's about, you know, other people knowing that you're safe and that you're going to get around okay. And again, that can be related to the cane as well. People guiding you, it helps them because they're not pulling you around from crowds and things like that. Again, the dog, you know, will do the same thing. So, you know, I think you've definitely sparked some interest in guide dogs tonight, Paul. So,
Maria,
thanks for that. Yes,
it's Stacy from Florida.
Hey,
Stacy. I just want to tell you hi. I just want to tell you that there is a free cane through the National Institute of, NIB, National Institute of the Blind, that you can get a cane from if anybody needs one.
Oh, good.
It's not a fold-up cane. I recently ordered one because I've gone through mobility. I'm going through mobility training right now. Mm-hmm. And I got a nice one, actually, through my mobility trainer, through the Lighthouse for the Blind. But I said, what the heck? I get nothing now. I have nothing. I might as well get a free cane out of this.
There you go.
Anyway, it's not bad. It's good for indoors because it slides really nicely. But I want you guys to know that there is a free cane, and that's my thing.
Oh,
end
thank
of story.
You, Stacey. Thank you. No, thank you. I don't think we've ever said that.
No. All right. Talk to you later.
Guys, it's Lisa here. Just so let you know, that service is not free in Canada. It only applies to the United States.
For the blind? Or is that
just
a U.S.?
What service isn't free in Canada?
For the cane, for the free cane.
Oh, okay.
It is not applicable to Canada.
Oh, okay.
Of course, we get nothing free. You guys get it all.
Well, that's been cut back a lot in the last few years, that's for sure. It used to be a lot more available, and you kind of have to work at it harder to get things.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
If you're employed or trying to get a job, you can get assistance in most from most states. If you're not employed or you're older, it's a lot less is available now than used to be, and they're much tighter on the amount that they'll spend on an individual usually. They also do fairly well generally with college or higher education situations, but it's since the late 80s, it's started to get cut back then, and it keeps getting cut back and cut back.
Yeah.
Thank goodness with the technology like iPhones and that kind of thing that those software packages are, even though they're not cheap sometimes, are a lot less expensive than the desktop versions of like Zoom Text or JAWS, which are, you know, $700-$900. So the technology is improving, and that's the great thing about the iPhones is they've got the accessibility stuff built into them as part of the operating system. Now the Android stuff has it somewhat, but it's not as smooth operationally as the iPhone Apple approach.
Right.
So,
and we probably could have a whole Apple products and assistive technology and accessibility phone call. I think we haven't had one for a while, so that's a whole another subject. But unless anyone has any other questions or comments, we're right about 6 o'clock. So does anyone have any last questions or comments?
Yeah, hey Paul. My rehabilitation counselor told me that you need 20 hours of O&M training for the guide dog, for the blind. Do you know if that's true?
No, that's not true.
Oh, okay.
As long as you can show that you can use the cane, there's not a specific number of hours.
Okay.
This is more of a comment. I'm Henry. I'm from New Jersey. I'm definitely the youngest person on this conference call. I'm only 14. And I just started high school a couple of weeks ago, and I just wanted to add in on two things. One about the cane, about it being, not just for yourself but for other people, that I don't really use it in school just because I know the environment really well, and I think for familiar environments, I think everyone here can attest to that if you've been you go to the same place every day, that you get pretty used to it and do the same route almost every day that you get really used to it. But say for walking home, which there are other people and cars and things like that you want to have it out. And also for KNFB Reader, which was mentioned a little while ago, I also use that for proofreading essays in class and things like that, and it is really good. But I just wanted to throw in that sometimes graphics can throw it off a bit, and also screens don't really work terrifically with it because of screen glare, and also sometimes graphics and applications throw it off, and it muddles with it, and sometimes it just reads off letters and characters, and that really isn't terrifically helpful.
That's
just my two cents.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Henry. You were at the conference this year, weren't you?
I was.
Yes. I remember you there. So thank you for calling in and speaking up. That's some good stuff. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Well, good. Anybody else? No? Going once? All right. Well, listen, it is about the nine o'clock West Coast, and a couple of quick things. So before we give out Paul's information, I just want to remind everyone that if you would like to be a guest speaker on LHON Live in the future, please feel free to email us at lhonlive@gmail.com. Or if you have any comments or suggestions, we're happy to listen to them or hear them anytime. And, again, we appreciate everyone calling in tonight. We especially appreciate Paul for sharing all that great information. Obviously, he's just a wealth of it, and he's probably going to be bombarded with phone calls starting tomorrow. But so at this time, if you want his number, contact information, please get out your paper and Sharpies and or computer or phone or whatever, because we're going to give it out, and you need to be ready. So I hope everybody's ready. All right. Paul, why don't you go ahead and give them your information.
Okay. My telephone number is area code 614-231-8001. That's my home number. And email address is a simple one. It is C-L-O-P-A-W, that's like Clopaw, C-L-O-P-A-W, @gmail.com. And if you would, just so I can sort through them if we need to, just put LHON in the subject so I know it's one of you guys contacting me.
Great.
And I'm on the in Ohio, so that's Eastern time zone. I'm around most of the time, so feel free to give me a call if you have any questions. And, again, I hope I didn't jump around too much, but I was trying to get a lot of information out there.
Oh, no.
In a short period.
You did great. You did great, Paul, and we so appreciate you taking the time to be with us. Did everyone get that number and email? Hopefully you did.
Can I get the phone number one more time?
Sure. 614-231-8001.
And it's at clopaw@gmail.com?
Correct.
Thank you.
Great. And if anyone just thinks they might want the number later, I think hopefully I'm not overstating my line here. You could probably Facebook message Lissa, and
yes,
she would probably be happy to forward
yes.
Paul's information to you.
Yes.
Okay. So
got it. I'm happy to. Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
please
anytime.
Keep that in mind. You know, she's great to be able to, if you heard someone you wanted to talk to on tonight's call, she's great at connecting people too on Facebook. So, again, Jessica, Andy, and I would like to thank all of you and Paul. Thank you so much for being on our call. And
thank
remember,
you.
We just tons of information, and I'm sure we could have you on several more calls, and hopefully we will. Again, contact us at lhonlive@gmail.com, and our next call will be November 4th. Same time, same place, all that good stuff. And, of course, we will promote it beforehand so you will be reminded on Facebook. And until then, we hope everyone has a great rest of the month, and we look forward to talking to all of you in November. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Graham. Bye.
Bye, Jessica. You still there? Andy. Bye, everyone.
Bye for now.